everybody. Welcome to the Myers Way podcast. Today, our special guest is Brianne Herman, who is our registered dietitian and nutritionist at Austin Ultra Health. She's our head nutritionist, so you guys are super lucky. You're going to hear it straight from the horse's mouth, as our patients do. So welcome, Brianne.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me today.
We're excited to have you. And today's topic, I kind of asked everybody on Facebook if we had Brianne on the show, what you guys would like to hear about. And one of the themes that kind of everybody seemed to be bringing up a lot was about children and getting picky eaters and unhealthy eaters to become little Myers Way healthy eaters. So, and I know that's a big hot topic. Whenever you're chatting with patients, they're always trying to, you know, ask about their kids and things like that as well. So we're excited to hear from you some tips that you provide to our patients and their families about healthy eating.
Yeah, this is a fun topic. I'm definitely excited about this one today.
Good. Well, let's get started with, you know, what is your experience working with kids and obviously your background in nutrition?
Yeah. Well, to back up really far, my parents, I'm lucky with that. They did a really great job of teaching my sister and me how to, the importance of healthy eating. And so I've had that since I was a young kid. Unfortunately, back then, we didn't really know what healthy eating meant in regards to inflammation like we do now. But still, we ate lots of vegetables, fruits, nothing much out of a package. Kirsten and I were always jealous of our friends that had the fun, sugary cereals with cartoon characters on the boxes. But we were left with the plain Cheerios and the Grape Nuts. But it really set a great foundation because when I went off on my own, I still chose those kind of foods because that's the foundation that my parents laid for me. And particularly my mom, just the way that they influenced our eating really gave me a good foundation of how to make healthy eating fun and an expected part of growing up. So it wasn't an option in our house. It was just expected and a healthy part of our life. And then a little later, my sister began to struggle with illness at a very young age. And the way that my mom really focused on food with her for healing, I think really impacted how seriously I viewed the power of food. And that played a really big role in me deciding to go into dietetics at UT. So I did study at the University of Texas in the dietetics program, and then did my internship in Austin. And then professionally, my biggest experience with working with kids and nutrition was through the Austin YMCA. And there I taught some interactive classes for kids that were above their healthy weight and their entire family, because we do believe it's a whole family affair. So these classes were for about nutrition and health and being active and really focusing on empowering these kids with the knowledge about nutrition that was appropriate for their age level and giving them opportunities to apply that knowledge with their family and with peers that were all reaching towards the same goal. And I think that was really important, and it definitely influenced me and how I practice with child nutrition now, just how important knowledge, having them have their own goals, and the family support is huge. But I think one of the most important things I saw was having a community of peers. So kids their age that were all doing the same thing and working towards the same goal. And then now, I do love working with kids, but most patients at Austin Ultra Health are adults and I like them too. But it's always fun getting to work with the occasional pediatric patient. And also really neat when an adult patient brings their child in to come see us. And either way, though, if a mom comes in my office or a dad or any parent or caregiver, it does come up a lot how to make this whole work for the whole family, especially the picky eater at home or the kid that does get stomach aches a lot. So it does end up coming up a lot, even in working with just primarily adults now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, two things that I heard you saying is, as with myself as well, that we grew up in a household where, you know, this was the way that entire household ate. And I think that's really the foundation, and one of the things that we try to teach people at Austin Ultra Health is is about, you know, that's why we call it the Myers way. It's for the entire family. It's a way of life. It's not that mom and dad are eating the broccoli and the cauliflower and the, you know, piece of fish and the kids are eating mac and cheese, that really, that the entire family is eating that meal together. And it's sometimes, I think, a little foreign for the two of us when people are coming in saying, well, my kids don't like this and my kids don't like that. And we're thinking, well, wait a minute, because, you know, both you and I grew up where that mm-hmm. wasn't really the option, and your taste buds are formed so early on, and that really the kid really doesn't know the difference if you're starting out with smoothies and green juices and vegetables, if that's really how they're started out from the very beginning. It's just, unfortunately, you know, we're started out with the rice cereal or the, you know, cookie and things like that and mac and cheese because of the commercials, and, you know, it just, it's made it a lot easier for busy parents to, you know, get something on the run for the kids and whatnot. So I think really starting out, that's going to be one of the take home points here, is it's never too late. So even if, you know, your family is already formed and your kids are older, that it's not too late. But also if you're a new mom or dad starting out early, this is the time to really make those choices in the beginning for the kids. And then, yes, secondly, working at Austin Ultra Health, we really are gearing this towards an entire family affair. So even if we're only seeing one child, or we're seeing the mom, or we're seeing the dad, again, we call it the Myers way, so the entire family gets benefit from whomever that one person is that came in to see us, but that really the entire family changes their choices.
Mm-hmm. And I find that the most successful patient does have support at home. And hopefully it's the whole family. Sometimes it's just a spouse. But even for adults, they need that support to be able to be successful. And it's going to so much more need that support than even an adult would.
Absolutely. And it makes it so much easier. You know, when you have one child who has a food sensitivity, to just go ahead and make the whole family, you know, free of that food so that the kid doesn't feel differently. Meals are easy, you know, all that kind of stuff. So let's talk about, you know, well, why should we even care? So if your kid's not sick, which I think is one of the, you know, interesting things, we'll have a parent in who's super sick and their child isn't sick. And so it's really kind of hard to convince them to change the diet now before something potentially happens to them. So even if your kids are healthy or seemingly healthy, why is it important for them to eat nutritious food?
Well, everyone definitely wants the best for their kids, and I don't think any parent would disagree with that. And things are shifting to where at least the idea of providing healthier school lunches maybe and snacks and the vending machines. Like, I've seen those new eco-friendly, eco-healthy vending machines at those schools. So shifting, but I still think it's easy for us to default to giving kids these less nutritious foods just because they're kids, or just because they seem to be able to eat anything, have that candy, and still have fine energy and good sleep and no pain. But what I see in my office now is flash forward 20, 30, 40 years to the adult that's saying they used to be able to eat whatever they wanted, the candy, the cereal, whatever that is, without any pain or illness. But now they're super sick. And so my goal is to really show people that whatever's going on under the surface, even as a child, it's not perfectly fine, and then bam, one day the illness comes out of nowhere. No, something was going on that whole time, that whole childhood. And I want to figure out what that is before the kid turns 40 and has the autoimmune disease in our office, or irritable bowel, or they've had headaches, or they can't have a baby. So that's definitely an extreme scenario, but I think that it's very common, and we need to figure out what health is for the kids, not when they go off to college, but they need to start doing that themselves. And then the other thing is really it's important to define what sick is and what not sick is, which we can get into more a little bit later. But I find out, I find what we call normal is not really ideal. So a kid that doesn't have the stomach ache or the weight issues, but maybe that they're on ADD medication, I can call that ideal. And there's something going on that we would define in our office as less than ideal and maybe sick. So we want to get to the root of what's going on there. Or the kid that sleeps okay and they'll eat well, but they have a rash on their arms or their legs. So that still is something going on that we would define as sick and try to figure out what's getting to it. And then for the kid that literally has nothing going on, which I haven't seen myself, but if that is the case for your kid, that's great. You're very lucky parents. But we still want to set them up for a lifetime of health, not just that they have a good 15, 20 years and then it's downhill from there, but just set them up for eating a variety of foods and prevention of disease.
Absolutely. I mean, the number of patients that I have in my office, and I'll say, you know, we're going through the family history, and I'll say to mom or dad, any problems with the kids? And they'll say, no, they're totally healthy. I'm like, okay, no behavior problems? Oh, actually, yeah, they actually are on Adderall. I'm like, okay, so wait, when did that not become a problem? Or when did that, when was it perceived that the two-year-old or even the two-month-old or the two-week-old that's on Zantac or Nexium or something for reflux because mom wasn't able to breastfeed and they're having to do milk or formula, and they have actually a sensitivity to dairy, and they're vomiting or have reflux and screaming and crying because their tummy hurts because they actually have a casein or a milk allergy or sensitivity, but you know, the doctor just says, oh, it's reflux or colic, and here are these meds. So it's really, I think, as you touched on, the new normal is really vastly different from optimal, right? I mean, we see all these commercials for all these medicines, so it's to be assumed that your kid has ADD or that you have depression or you have reflux or, you know, heartburn. And, you know, when you see all these commercials for PMS and headaches or infertility, and so you think, oh, of course, everybody's dealing with this. But back in the day, I mean, when I was growing up, I know you're younger than me, but when I was growing up, there were no allergies and no, you couldn't bring peanuts or something to the school. And nobody I knew was on any type of ADD medication. I mean, I never even heard of that, you know, growing up. So
yeah,
a lot of these diseases are new phenomenon because of, you know, frankly, how we've changed our diet and how much packaged and GMO and gluten and dairy and processed foods that we're eating.
And one other thing that I thought of when you're talking, I'll get these teenagers in my office or the college woman who says, well, as a baby, I couldn't tolerate the cow's milk after my mom stopped breastfeeding me, so I did soy, but now I'm okay with cow's milk and cheese. And so, but they're still in my office for a reason. And so they feel like they grew out of it because they didn't have that same symptom of vomiting or the rash as they did when they were a baby, but now it's something else where their PMS is really bad or they're having those headaches. And so we're just really getting confused with the typical doctor's advice on what that looks like and how we may grow out of it. But I don't really see that to be the case here.
Yeah, those are usually IgE allergies, a food allergy that then becomes a food sensitivity. And I know we'll talk a little bit more about that. And I certainly have another podcast just all on food sensitivities about how those do manifest rather than, as you said, vomiting. But now it's the migraine headache or it's the acne or it's the PMS. And so it's a delayed reaction that's manifesting as something else. So it too is my belief that you do not grow out of these things. They just now manifest as something else. So if you were ever given the advice as a child that you had a milk allergy, you did not grow out of that. It's probably just manifesting as something else now. So, Okay, well, how can we, you know, I think one of the things with families is, you know, they feel like eating healthier, eating the broccoli is boring because the kids are watching TV and they see Dora is, you know, the explorer on the mac and cheese box. So how do we make eating healthy more fun for kids?
The biggest thing I want to focus on is the umbrella of all these tips is focusing on the positive stuff and the things they can eat and the ways that it is done, the activities they can do, rather than telling them that they can't eat that cereal or that mac and cheese, because that's not going to be fun for them no matter how you try to play it. But even with adults, I do this. So they come in my office and we're going to talk about an elimination diet and the foods that they need to eliminate. The first thing I do is go through all of the approved foods, all the whole foods, all the vegetables and fruits and lean meats and everything that we do want them to enjoy because they're not sources of inflammation for most people. So they can see all the various amounts of foods that are available to them rather than starting with don't eat these 12 things. So that's what I want to do for the kids that I interact with, and also I want to advise parents to do that as well. And then a couple very applicable tips I have. Washing your hands and playing with your food. I think that can be one of the best ways to make vegetables less threatening, is for kids to really just play with them. And this can be a separate time from mealtime, so you can maintain whatever rules your family has around dinner and behavior. But there are so many creative things to do with vegetables. And I've seen some great pictures and some great examples of this. And I even looked online a little bit recently of adorable little cauliflower sheep and cucumber frogs and these little tomato ladybugs and carrot flowers. There's so many different things that they can do to have, one, a craft time, an activity, but also get their hands dirty with these vegetables. And then they seem less scary when they can eat them for dinner because they made a sheep out of it a couple hours before. So that can be really fun. And then we do want to enjoy sweet treats. We all enjoy sugar in some form. And so to make it the healthiest possible is a good way to still make it that fun without just saying no and no and no to the candy. So have that, again, be another activity, and you as the parent can control what goes into that instead of the processed ingredients from a store. One of my favorite treat recipes right now is these raw cookie dough bites. I think we brought them into the office before from the Nourishing Home website, and they're gluten and dairy and egg free, and they're just these little cookie dough bites, and you can use whatever nut butter you like. There's things like flaxseed and coconut flour and a little bit of honey to make it sweet, and that would just be a really fun thing for kids to be able to roll up the cookie dough bites and have that as a semi-healthy snack or treat. Compared to the alternatives that are pretty normal. And another thing, create a menu together is something I've done with kids that I've taught before, and I even do this in my office sometimes. So just letting your child be a chef, and they get to be involved in choosing the dinners for the week if they're old enough to do that. Having them draw and color on a paper plate foods that they would want to have for dinner. And you can definitely set the guidelines on that. So they have to choose two vegetables and a meat or something like that. But again, they're interacting and they're doing things that kids like to do, like coloring and involving those healthy foods.
Those all sound amazing ideas, and I'm over here smiling because just, you know, I was brought back some childhood memories that I were not at the forefront of my mind. When I was little, you know, we ate whole wheat bread, usually homemade. We had peanut butter we never had Jif or anything like that. We always had just the fresh ground peanuts. And so my mother would make these open face sandwiches that was whole wheat bread with some peanut butter on it, drizzle some honey, and then had fruit as a face. So yes. We had bananas for the eyes and a blueberry for the nose and a strawberry for the mouth. And that was lunch. And then I remember later, more into my teenage years, making this when I actually became a vegetarian. I made this, it was called broccoli forest, and it was rice, brown rice base with some, it did have egg and cheese in it, and then it had these stalks of broccoli standing up like trees in this, and mm-hmm. It was like a casserole. So, I mean, these are just great. I mean, some of those foods are not things that we would recommend now. I mean, maybe your child doesn't have a gluten or dairy issue, although because of how we've processed those things, the gluten and dairy that I was eating back then are very different than, you know, what we have available now, but something along those lines. So I think those were really, you know, those were influential in my life that I just had kind of forgotten about. But as you brought it up, I mean, I really had a big smile over here remembering the picnic in the front yard with the open-faced peanut butter sandwich. And it just, it was so fun. And I thought my mother was very creative, but I thought, you know, it was so cool. I was having this super cool, fun sandwich, compared to, you know, just the standard, whatever everybody else was eating. So great ideas. Good. Great ideas with that. And there was something else I was thinking of, but I can't. Oh, and then, you know, now I don't eat gluten or dairy, but I'm here at the beach with my family. And my brother has two young girls, and we have the Cupcake Club. And we make gluten-free, dairy-free, egg-free cupcakes every year. And we've been doing this for years now, or for several years now. And they don't, you know, adhere to this in their own home. But, you know, here at the beach, that's what we do. And they love them. They can't even tell the difference. I mean, they are so excited to be making these cupcakes together and decorating them. And we're always getting, you know, the sugar-free stuff or the gluten-free stuff without chemicals, all kinds of, you know, things to decorate the cupcakes. So it's a fun activity that we have every year. So it doesn't mean that you can't be doing quote unquote, you know, normal behaviors of baking a cake or baking cupcakes or baking cookies. I mean, of course, we don't want to be eating these things every day, but it doesn't mean that your child can't ever have these things. There's just ways to make healthier choices with, you know, coconut oils and you know, flaxseed as the eggs and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So what do we do, I mean, for the picky child? I was the pickiest of eaters growing up. We were talking about it last night. I guess this meal that my father made for my half-sister, I was like, yeah, I never remember having that as a child. So the conversation sort of started circling about me and what did I have. And I would go on these binges of, not binges, but phases of where I only ate eggs. And then there was another one where I only ate cottage cheese and white rice. Kind of frightening. But
I can't even imagine you as a picky eater. That's
oh
funny.
My God. Yeah. Isn't it funny? Yes. I was so picky. So now I'm picky in a totally different way of making sure it's organic and no GMOs and stuff. But so my pickiness is just manifested into a different way. I eat a larger variety, but less things. So yeah. What do you do for the kid that was like me?
Well, definitely tricky, as I'm sure your parents can attest to. And I don't have kids myself yet, so I can't pretend to understand how difficult that could be on a daily basis. But a lot of parents have let me have fun with their kids and experiment with this stuff. So I do have some good ideas based off experience, and hopefully I can offer some encouragement in this. One of the best things about the program that I taught at the YMCA for nutrition was setting goals. So all the kids, each session would set two goals, one related to nutrition and one related to physical activity. And we used this system called SMART goals. And so it was very specific, and we had them learn what it was before they even set their own goals. But the S in SMART means specific. So the goal needed to be specific. M was measurable. So whatever they decided, you had to be able to measure if they were able to achieve that goal or not. A was achievable. So we wanted them to set a type of goal that they could achieve. It wasn't too hard because we wanted them to set them up for success and encouragement and praise. But if it was ever too easy for them, then we could just make it harder. But we wanted it always be achievable right away. And then the R stood for relevant. So I didn't want the kid who never drinks soda to make a goal to never drink soda, because that's obviously not relevant for them. It's not going to help their health in any way. So something that was relevant to something they're struggling with. And then lastly, the T stands for time limited. So I think this is true for adults and kids as well, is to have a goal that has an end date makes it seem less daunting, less scary, to be able to say, okay, I'm only doing this for 2 weeks or 4 weeks. So you have this feeling of, okay, I don't have to do it for the rest of my life. And I hear that every day in my office. I can do anything for 2 weeks for the elimination diet. So definitely a common theme. So I want kids to feel like they don't have to do this forever. And then hopefully by the end of their time limit, they want to do it longer. So setting these goals themselves, they worked with their parents to figure out what a good SMART goal would be for them. But when it came down to it, they were the ones to choose their specific goal. And then every time I would see them, I would be the one to check in and ask how their goals were going and what they were successful at and what they were having some trouble at, and to be able to praise them and give them encouragement in areas they were doing good or not so good at. And then the second part of this goal system, there was a rewards part. And so the kids would work with these parents to come up with a reward that was equivalent to the type of goal that they set. So not something huge. It doesn't even need to be monetary. But they would come up with something that they wanted to help them work towards their goal. And a lot of times it was more time with mom and dad, or to go outside and do an activity and play soccer with dad after school, or to get a new jump rope. Or to get some stickers. So it was something small, A kid doesn't need a new pair of shoes or a TV when they do a little thing every week, but something to help them be motivated. And I saw kids do amazing things based off these goals. They were so excited to tell me when they achieved their goals and to get a sticker from me and then a reward from their parent. And I saw these really picky eaters try a new vegetable. And for them, achievable meant maybe only one bite, but that was okay. I was completely fine with the kid trying one little piece of broccoli, even though I would love for them to eat a couple cups. But if they're going from zero to a little bit, that was a huge success for us. So definitely try that for your picky eaters. And I'd love to hear any feedback on that because I've seen lots of success there.
Yeah, I think also incorporating things like we do in our office, which is juices and smoothies. I mean, it's really, I find, you know, even my dad had a sip of my green juice this morning, which was amazing. He thought it tasted like grass, but, you know, he had a sip. So it's really, you know, you can add in, at least to get started, you know, more fruits to come to cover up the taste of some of the vegetables. I mean, my niece now drinks green smoothies with my brother. And, you know, you can't even really taste the kale and spinach and things like that in these smoothies if you're adding, you know, you don't want to go overboard with the fruit, but you can definitely mask it. And oftentimes they don't even know that certain things are in there.
Right.
So that's another suggestion as well. And I know something that was helpful for me is certainly if you have a child that, you know, maybe has a sensitivity to gluten or dairy and they're already being somewhat restrictive, you know, as long as you're not going outside those guidelines, allowing them to, you know, make those choices and kind of not eat what they want. But I know that it was helpful for me rather than being forced to eat things when I was on my cottage cheese and rice days that, you know, seeing everybody around me eating this healthy stuff. And, you know, then I gradually was like, oh, what are they doing over there? So sort of setting by example and not forcing was something that was helpful for me, just seeing other people eating this other stuff and, oh my God, it's delicious. And, you know, don't you want to try it rather than, you know, this is it, you know, this is what we're eating. And if you don't eat this, you're not getting dinner tonight. I mean, those kind of, at least for me, those tactics never worked.
Yeah. Finding those kids in the neighborhood that are good eaters and inviting them over for dinner and making new friends with good eating kids.
Yeah. And I mean, I think really it all goes back to, you know, starting early, because I think when you're starting early with setting the examples, then there's less that you have to potentially try to change. And exactly that. I mean, we often advise, you know, we have parents come in and they're, you know, one or two of their children have, you know, this or that sensitivity, and they'll say, well, it's so hard at school, you know, this, or when we're going out with friends and we get invited to do this, or even people who don't have children and they're just out, and we'll often say, you're going to need to get new friends. I mean, it's equivalent to being, you know, potentially like an alcoholic, where, you know, if all your friends before were drinkers and you went to the bars together, and now, you know, that you've realized that's a problem for you and you can't go to the bars and now you're going to go to the movie instead. It's like, yeah, if you used to go out and eat, I mean, of course, now there's gluten-free pizza and whatnot, but, you know, if your friends were the ones that you were friends because you went out for ice cream or because you went out for, you know, donuts every Sunday morning, if they're not willing to be open to your new way of life and trying something different, you might actually need to get new friends. I know for me, a lot of people are always asking me, well, what do you do when you go out to eat? And I was like, well, actually, I mean, it's kind of great. Everybody in my office eats like I do, you know? So when somebody's buying lunch for the office or, you know, somebody's sharing food, we know that, you know, it's usually going to be within the realm of what everybody in the office can eat. When I go out to eat, many of my friends, you know, practice this way of life as well. And so it's really easy. You know, it's not a chore of what restaurant do we go to. We know that it's going to be in alignment, you know, for each one of us because we share a similar lifestyle. So we're not joking when we say that. You know, of course we want to keep our same friends if they're willing to open and expand to new things. But if they're not, you know, it may, you know, require finding some other outlets of support for yourself or your family so that you can, you know, have this new healthy way of life in terms of food.
Yeah, for sure.
So what are, you know, I know families and kids, you know, getting up in the morning, getting ready for school, going to school. What are some kind of quick breakfast and even some school lunch ideas?
Yeah, you mentioned smoothies with your niece, and I think that's one of the quickest things that that's what I do in the morning is really quick if I'm not having leftovers. And if you have everything in one section of your fridge, it's really easy to just throw everything in the blender. I know some people think that it might take a while, but it's one of the quickest things you could probably do. And throwing those green leafy vegetables in there. Kids likely can't taste it. They may be turned off by the color. And I've challenged kids to do a blindfold test to see if they can actually tell if it has leaves in it or not, because really it doesn't taste like that for the most part. But just quick things. I mean, if your kid can tolerate egg, a hard-boiled egg can be a really quick thing in the morning. Leftover soup in a thermos can be good. An apple or any type of fruit with a nut butter, almond butter, maybe peanut butter. I do like using those brown rice tortillas for kids that do eat grains or they're switching from gluten to gluten-free. Brown rice tortillas wrapped in with a banana or a little bit of jam and nut butter can be good and quick and on the go. This morning I had a sweet potato with some coconut butter. That can be a really quick thing. And that sweetness in the potato, obviously, and also the coconut butter can really be attractive for kids. If you are doing some gluten-free muffins or things like that, making a lot on a weekend and then putting them in the freezer and just the night before popping it in the fridge, that can be a really quick grab-and-go thing too, or your own nut and fruit and nut bars, making those ahead of time as well and putting them in individual packages, grab-and-go there. So lots of good options. And then obviously there are a lot more gluten and dairy-free options if you had more time in the morning to cook some stuff. But jumping down to school lunches, it can be tough for sure if your kid is eating in the cafeteria, because not only the health concerns of just general nutrition, but also for food sensitivities. And so if your kid is going to eat in the cafeteria, make sure you're working with the administration. Everybody knows the sensitivities that your kid has that would be necessary to provide them with the safe, healthy food. Looking at the menu with your child beforehand, normally they send those home with your kid, and you can look at them together and decide what they could eat or what they should stay away from, and make it a decision that they already know going into the cafeteria what they're going to have. And then packing lunches is a lot easier to control, obviously, what's going into that. I remember growing up the night before, my mom would have us put everything that we could, get it ready even before the morning. And so we could just grab it and throw it in our lunch sack. And then the things that needed to be prepared in the morning, we do that really quick. So it saved a lot of time having everything mostly ready. And then I think having the best equipment, lunch kit stuff is helpful for school lunches. I'll have kids in my office with the little trays that have little compartments in them so they can have all their food separately, because young kids seem to like their food not touching. So they can have their vegetables and their fruit and their meat all in separate little containers. And they have the thermos to keep things hot. And so just having the right lunch kit materials can really help making a healthy lunch doable.
Yeah, and I think we'd both agree on this, and I know it's very difficult out there, but if you have the choice to either, you know, send lunch with your child or have them eat the school lunch, if it is at all within your budget and time, you know, time constraints and things like that, absolutely bringing something from home is always going to be better, unless your child is in some fancy-smanchy school that, you know, is doing all organics and stuff like that. I mean, any of this food that's institutionalized coming from, you know, Sysco and things like that, it's really going to have, you know, a lot of hidden ingredients. It's not going to be, you know, organic. It's not going to, you know, it's going to have GMOs and things like that. So, you know, when you can provide, you know, for your child and control that at home, that is always going to be better. Now, I certainly know there, you know, it's just some schools don't allow it. Other schools, it's just, you know, maybe it's not affordable to you if you're listening to this podcast, or just you may be a single mother with five kids, you know, working to, you know, just really keep the lights on. So I don't want to you know, I totally get you got to do what you got to do. But if you are not, you know, in that situation and you can take your, have your child take a pack of lunch, that is definitely, definitely going to be a better scenario all around.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
And so we hear a lot of controversy surrounding, you know, milk and calcium and the kids growing need calcium for their bones. What are your thoughts on, you know, we definitely get that. Oh, my kid, you know, what's my kid going to drink? They love milk. They're always on milk. You know, the pediatrician says they need it. What should I do?
Yeah, that is a very common question. I would say most moms ask that even if they're off dairy, they still have their kids on it for that reason. And I'm going to refer to a couple of things you've actually said in some podcasts or an article. You wrote a great article called The Dangers of Dairy, and there's some good stuff in that that I would definitely refer people to. But the first thing I think we need to look at is the benefit and cost of every situation. Like you mentioned in your thyroid podcast about the benefit of thyroid health with the cruciferous vegetables, and we still want to eat those if we can. When it comes to dairy, we do find that it does a lot more harm than good to our bodies. So I prefer really kids and anybody getting calcium from other food sources like green veggies, oranges, there's fortified almond milks, that kind of stuff. In that Dangers of Dairy article, you outlined a couple things, just how inflammatory dairy really is, and how it's acid forming and actually could weaken our bones by pulling the calcium from them instead of actually strengthening our bones like we all hear growing up. And hopefully that's going to shift pretty soon. And then lastly, also, dairy is just really filled with hormones and antibiotics. So the cost of dairy to us seems a lot more heavy than the benefit of that calcium there. And there's listed in the article as well, lots of non-dairy sources of calcium, like I mentioned with the green veggies and the citrus and some foods that are fortified that kids are likely eating. So I encourage people to check out that article on our blog.
Absolutely. Thanks for mentioning that. And then one of the, you know, comments that I always get after that article is, well, what about raw? You know, what about goat? So, you know, our thought on that is, you know, I personally can't tolerate dairy. The thought of raw milk does not appeal to me. If you can tolerate that, that is definitely the better way to go. I mean, assuming that it's, you know, not with hormones, not with antibiotics, that you know you're a farmer and you're getting that, or raw goat's milk. Those things can, for some people, be beneficial. For others, you know, there's casein in all of that. And if you have an issue with casein, then you know, whether it's raw or pasteurized, it's not going to be good for you. And if you are not getting it raw and you do, for whatever reason, decide that you want to drink milk or want your child to drink milk, absolutely be getting, you know, 100% certified organic. Therefore, it's not fed GMO feed and doesn't have the antibiotics and the hormones. Although I have heard all kinds of some nightmare stories about even some of the biggest ones like Horizon, you know, having some, you know, just not always adhering to those guidelines. So you really need to be careful out there. But the take-home point of that article is that really we have calcium that can be better absorbed through real foods, fruits and vegetables, as well as, you know, now these milks, like you mentioned, almond milk or hemp milk or flax milk, are all fortified with calcium as well. And so, all right. Well, so, you know, our program, The Myers Way, and we often have a parent coming in and, you know, and we say, go ahead and try to do this with your whole family. So can kids go through The Myers Way?
Yeah, definitely. We encourage every parent that comes in our office that their kids join on the program as well. I feel like most of you probably know what the Myers Way is, but for those of you that don't, it is a whole foods program. We focus on real foods like vegetables, fruits, nuts, seeds, lean meats. During this program, focusing on those foods and avoiding toxic and inflammatory foods just for a couple weeks. And then the second phase of the program, adding those foods back in to really see how each person is responding uniquely to that food. And so it's more of a diet experiment, I like to say, to really figure out what triggers of inflammation might be, what foods could be causing that rash or the ADD or behavior problems. So I think starting early is better. I'd rather a kid get to do this when they're in junior high than when they're 40 in my office and have had decades of being sick. And so I definitely encourage kids to do this program with you. Kids in my office, I've found that they have better coordination in their school sports. They can play better in PE without getting tired. Parents notice them getting along better with their siblings and their friends, and being more aware of family needs, and resolving maybe some of the rashes that they've had, or the itchiness, or even headaches, or those stomach aches they'd get after every time they had a smoothie with some regular milk in there. So I would love for every kid to get to go through a program like this before they are 40 and sick in my office.
Absolutely. And for the basic program, we do allow, you know, whole grains, non-glutinous grains, and nuts and seeds. Brianne's so used to me having somebody with autoimmune that we take those out. But, you know, for the basic program, which makes it easier for kids if we're just trying to go gluten and dairy free or get out some of the top inflammatory foods, they can have things such as the rice, tortillas, and things like that you mentioned. So it's and I love, you know, how you mentioned a science experiment. That's how we really refer to it when we have a child in our office that's going through the program. We refer to it of, you know, do you like science? And you're going to be doing an experiment where you take some foods out and then you get to eat them, a whole lot of them, you know, over a couple of days, and you get to experiment and see how you feel. And I'm sure you've noticed this the same way I have, which is that often when we have a kid in our office with food sensitivities, and I'll have you kind of go over that in a minute, who realizes the association between that fatigue and that food, or the joint pain in that food, or the headache in that food, or the stomach ache in that food, that really often it's frequently that over time, maybe the mom is a little less diligent, and it's really the child saying, no, mom, I can't have that. I can't have that. You know, that's what causes my tummy to hurt. So people are always asking me about compliance with children that we see. And it's quite ironic in some ways that I feel like a lot of the kids, particularly in the like 7 to 14 age range, are some of the most compliant patients that we have, because they really see that association and they don't want to have that tummy pain, or they don't want to have that joint pain or that headache. And so they're the ones that are policing mom and dad, saying, no, I've read those ingredients. I can't have this or I can't have that. And, you know, mom and dad are just so tired. They're thinking, it's okay if it's a little bit, you know, and your kid's going, no, I can't have that. So have you experienced that as well?
Definitely. And they'll come back to me and the moms will say, man, they just turn into these little label reading detectives, and they'll go take them to the grocery store and it'll take an hour and a half because they're looking at all the labels, which I love. I know that moms sometimes get a little tired with that, but it's so fun to see the kids really engage and be empowered in doing this for themselves.
Yeah, that's awesome. So just, quickly, if you want to talk about at the end here, because I think that's probably one of the main things that we see in children and why they're coming to see, you know, either you or you and me, is food sensitivities. So, you know, tell us about those, and then how can a family support their child with food sensitivities?
Well, some signs we've had really good response on your gluten article about 10 signs you have a gluten sensitivity. So I just want to hit some symptoms that I feel like typical kids have, and just really make people aware that these could be signs that your child does have a food sensitivity, and it's a good thing to investigate. So any kid that has any stomach issues, whether it be a stomach ache or they get really loose stool or diarrhea or cramping or bloating, any of that stuff, I would say there's probably something going on with their foods and in their gut. Headaches, any skin stuff, eczema, rashes, itchy skin. I was talking to a mom the other day about keratosis pilaris, and her son has that. And she was told, well, it's really common, he'll grow out of it. But we don't see that. We want, even if he does grow out of it, I want to find the root of what's going on and let that not be a cause of other symptoms as he gets older.
And that's the chicken skin on the back of your arms. And that's usually related to gluten. Just people may not know that scientific name.
Yep. So any skin stuff for sure. trouble focusing at school, I find a lot, not able to remember things, behavior issues at school or at home, getting tired really quickly, not having lots of energy, or poor sleep. A big one also, asthma and allergies are really huge when it comes to food sensitivities in kids. I see a big connection there. So those are just a few I see. I'm sure you have a couple to add.
Yeah, I mean, I think behavior is a big one. Moody, and then certainly if you have a girl and she's getting into, you know, menarche or periods, you know, PMS, joint pain is huge. You know, in kids, I think the thing is fatigue, moodiness, crankiness, you know, just short fuse, memory, behavior, learning disabilities, dyslexia, asthma, allergies. I just did a podcast last week with Dr. Kara Fitzgerald on, you know, asthma, eczema, and allergies, and all of that's usually related to gluten and dairy. And, you know, if your kid, just speaking of, can't get all the way through the Myers Way program, or I tell people, you know, if you want to start something on your own before you come see me or see me and Breanne, is just go gluten and dairy free. I mean, those really are the two biggest. I mean, then we probably can get into eggs and corn, but gluten, dairy, if you can get those out. And, you know, a lot of times people will tell me that, you know, they ran into me, they met me, they, you know, saw me at a party, whatever, and I give them that advice, and already, you know, that just pretty quickly, if you get those two foods out, things can turn around really quickly for people. Mm-hmm. The only, you know, downside of doing that before you came to see us would be that if you did want to get some testing done, some blood testing to see if they genuinely had a problem, then of course those tests could become negative. It would be what's called a false negative, meaning that they got the food out of their system and so it's no longer showing up on their blood test that it's a problem for them. But, you know, as we tell people, your body knows better than any test. So, I mean, frankly, I don't really care what the blood test shows. I mean, now certainly we get in situations where parents are getting divorced and one parent is on board with this and the other one isn't, and they want to see the blood test. They want the proof. You know, some people are just very scientific. They want to see that in, you know, red on a test. But, you know, really, if you get your child off of gluten and dairy and their asthma resolves and then you add it back in and it gets worse, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. You don't need a blood test. But, you know, if for whatever reason you want one, or, you know, you're in a situation where you really need to prove that, or your school requires it, of course, you know, don't give up the food and come see us, get the blood test done. But it really just breaks my heart. Sometimes it can, you know, you people can get in to see you, Breanne, much quicker than me. But, you know, sometimes it's 2 months before somebody can get in to see me and they're at home suffering with, you know, with seizures. That's another one, can be food sensitivities. That's usually gluten. Yeah. So seizures, you know, somebody at home with really, I mean, we had this frantic family race into the office one day and their son was literally about to be committed for his behavior. He was becoming very violent and they were literally in a panic and you know, it was going to be a while before they could get in to see me. And you kindly apparently walked out into the waiting room and told this family, you know, to go ahead and start gluten and dairy free. And by the time they got in to see me, his behavior, he was already no longer homicidal or suicidal. And so, you know, this, it can be very, very, very powerful in a situation like that. As we told this family, you know, it is the benefit of getting that out of his system versus, you know, waiting and getting a positive blood test so outweighs waiting. So, you know, you just have to decide that as a family, what you want to do. If you want to wait and get the blood test, or you want to try something at home that's free, go ahead. And if you need guidance, you know, we have the guide to gluten free, which is a gluten free, dairy free, and has all the recipes, or you can get the whole Myers Way, you know, comprehensive elimination diet, which walks you through the same program. These are ebooks on our website. Breanne sees her own patients as well, so you do not need to go through the whole shebang. Breanne does just either diet counseling with people. She does food sensitivity testing. She even does the stool test. So, you know, she can help a lot of people with sort of what we now consider basic things, food sensitivities, allergies, eczema, stomach issues, seasonal allergies, even behavioral problems just by, you know, seeing Breanne. So that is definitely an option for people to either go through the ebooks, see Breanne. We even have our guided cleanse, which is the ebook plus some visits with Breanne. So we have a lot of resources on our website. And then, of course, if you're doing our program either through the ebook or the guided cleanse, or as a patient of mine or Breanne's, you can join our Myers Way, the Myers Way community. Now, you do need to be going through our program to be part of that special community on Facebook, but Breanne is on there answering questions. Other patients who have gone through this or other people from around the world that have done our Myers Way program are there answering each other's questions, and that's a source of support for people as well. So, well, Breanne, this has been super helpful information. I know that the parents out there are just going to be thankful that we had you on today to discuss any of this. And, you know, if you want more, again, Breanne's available for health coaching or even, you know, sessions where you can come in and see her. If you're around the country or around the world, she even does phone consultations. So we are here as a resource, both of us and Breanne individually as well. So any kind of parting words you want to say, Breanne?
Just thanks for having me on. It's exciting to be able to share the good news about this stuff and hopefully offer some answers for some sick kids or just kids hoping to prevent future stuff from happening. So I wish parents and kids, everybody, ultra health.
Thanks, Breanne. Thank you so much. It's great to have you on today.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
To stay in touch with Dr. Myers, you can sign up for her newsletter on her website at dramyers.com or connect with her on Facebook or Twitter at Amy Myers MD.